often described as one of the greatest and most talented actors of the film and theater world, Nasiruddin Shah is a man who has both lived and worked on his own terms. Known to never mince his words, he's now taken his embrace of honesty one step, in fact, many steps further, with a searingly candid autobiography, And Then One Day. In this book, Nasir tells his own story, not just his story of how he became an actor, but many other incidents deeply personal to him that could not have been easy to write about and to come out into the public domain with. But that's Nasiruddin Shah for you. Today, we'll be in conversation with Nasiruddin Shah at the iconic Prithvi Theatre in Mumbai. The very first play that was staged here in the 1970s was a play in which Nasiruddin Shah acted, and so his association with Prithvi has been long, deep and intimate. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Nasiruddin Shah to Prithvi Theatre. So let me start by asking you, early on in your book, you say that people who are unintelligent, unattractive and unfriendly, these are words you use, I think, describing yourself as a young boy, they perhaps are more drawn to acting because they don't want to really deal with the reality of life as they know it.
All of them are not necessarily unattractive and unintelligent and uninteresting, as I was. But I would say it's people who have some problem about self-worth early in life. I don't know. It's a question I've been grappling with for a while. Many actors who I've encountered who are exceptional are people who are acting because they need to do it.
You talk about that moment when you are on stage for the first time as a young boy, and you say that not many people can understand that moment of complete acceptance that you felt. That love that you felt was the most intense love that can ever emerge, is that of an audience for an actor on stage. Why do you think you in particular had a problem with self-worth? Because clearly that's something that comes out in the early pages of your book, that somewhere acting was your escape.
I really don't know. I guess something must have happened, because I remember being a rather confident 3, 4, 5 year old. Then things began to change. I think it was because I got conscious of being judged. And I suspect if I were a child today, I would have been diagnosed as having ADD or something, you know. Yeah, it's not a joke. I really feel that's the case, because I really couldn't understand what was being said in class.
You didn't do well in studies.
No.
You were number 50 out of 50 in class.
50 out of 50, yeah.
And your father didn't approve.
Because
did that matter a lot?
Sure. He was old school. Those days, even now to a large extent, being an achiever was what mattered. He felt I was squandering the opportunity he was providing for me, and never ceased reminding me about it, which was perhaps a mistake on his part. But anyway, the fact is he felt let down.
And he felt let down by your choice to be an actor as well.
He felt let down by almost everything I did.
And how did that make you feel?
That I wish he was more open-minded. I remember feeling this even, you know, he found a Playboy magazine hidden in my physics practical notebook. He just quietly put it back and didn't say a word. I think he was so aghast at that. He caught me smoking. He knew about the fact that I bunk class and go and watch movies. He had no idea that I keep doing plays, though. So he still felt he could maybe hanko me back into line. It didn't work. And that's the important lesson I've learned, that one mustn't try to live one's children's lives for them. No matter how hard you try and no matter how clean your intentions may be, they're going to do what they're going to do.
Do you find yourself becoming your father now that you're a father?
At times, it's funny, I do. I have sometimes made the same mistakes. It's mimetics, you know. It's what affects you even though you don't know it. And it makes you behave in a certain way though you don't want to. despite being acutely aware of the mistakes my dad made and not wanting to repeat them and wanting very much to be friends with my children, I found myself repeating the mistakes. It just happens. It's beyond one's control.
Now, you write about growing up at St. Joseph's in Nainital and Hindi films actually being a taboo. No-go area. Taboo.
Yeah.
Scorned upon. Looked on as infradig. Do you think that, in a sense, defined your early scorn for the industry you would later find yourself in?
No, because I had seen Hindi movies even before going to St. Joseph's. When I was 3 and 4 years old, as I've written about Bahut Din Hue, and Nagin and Sangeet Samrat Tansen, all at Lakshmi Talkies, you know, in Nainital. Because my dad was a deputy collector there, and so we could go to any theatre we wanted, and he would send us to see films like The Living Desert and, you know, things like that. So I'd seen both kinds of movies, even before being exposed to Sam. I went there at the age of 6 in a boarding school. For some reason, only Dilip Kumar starers we were allowed to see. I think my dad was a great fan. And I could compare Kohinoor and Azad with something like Scaramouche, or with something like The Golden Blade, or The Thief of Baghdad. And there was just no comparison, you know. So I've always felt that Hindi movies try to ape Hollywood and never quite manage it.
And so many decades later, you are an icon of the same industry that you don't think very highly of.
I'm not an icon of the popular industry. I don't kid myself. There are a certain number of people who are interested in my work. I don't delude myself that that I'm an icon of any kind. I think, and I'm not a part of the film industry. I've never felt part of the film industry.
You find it too fake in some way? Too synthetic?
Synthetic. That's a better word. Yeah.
I've not known you to be careful, so you're being careful with your words today.
No, I don't find it terribly interesting, let's say. Neither the films they make, nor the people involved in them, nor anything about it. It's the rare Hindi movie that I really find entrancing or captivating. Rajkumar Hirani's work I like very much.
But not too much else.
Not too much else, yeah. And I'm not being snooty or anything. I love entertaining movies. I have nothing against entertainment cinema. I don't believe that cinema is meant to give serious messages and all that sort of thing. And as Hitchcock said, if you want to give messages, you should be in the postal service. You know, so I don't feel that cinema's only function is to make serious, boring movies. I definitely do not feel that. Its business is to engage. And
would you have wanted to be a hero in the classic sense?
Sure. I wanted to be and I tried to be. I've done movies where I've done all this kind of stuff. You know? And I was always very bad at it. I just couldn't manage. I could never quite believe in myself as a larger-than-life character. But you see, I went to the Film Institute after studying at the drama school. And I went to the Film Institute with an extremely condescending attitude, I have to admit. That I'm going there only because I want a passport into movies. As everybody said, the Film Institute acting course was in those days. In the late 60s and early 70s, there was a string of actors from the Film Institute who became successful, one after the other. It became like a factory for producing stars. And if you got into the Film Institute, it was a given that you're made. And so a lot of pretty undeserving people became stars for a short while. And they also disappeared just as quickly. But the fact is they made an impact. And so I went to the Film Institute hoping just to get this tappa. I'll get work in movies, I'll get 3 square meals a day. I'll play the policeman, or I'll play the doctor, or I'll play the gangster, whoever, you know. I'm not going to get the leading parts. Then meanwhile, films like Ankur and so on began to appear. And I felt, hey, here's an opening for me. Directors like this are going to need actors like me. And so being at the Film Institute isn't going to hurt. And so I went there, but to my great astonishment, it was at the Film Institute that I began to deconstruct my work with the help of Taneja Sahab, who I owe a great debt of gratitude to, and who helped me to analyze my work and understand what I was doing wrong and to understand my strong points also. I neglected completely to try to develop the abilities to act in popular cinema, which my dear classmate Shakti Kapoor was doing. He and I were in the same class.
Did you ever want to be a villain?
I thought I'd be a good villain. I'd probably be a better villain than a hero. I thought so then even. Shakti, I thought, would be a hero. But Shakti and I attended the same class. We saw the same movies. We were exposed to the same influences. He learned what he had to learn and I learned what I had to learn. I wish I'd learnt a little bit of what he learned.
Well, we're going to hear from Shyam Benegal in just a moment, who cast you in your first movie. But does it hurt after all these years that you're not what's called a saleable actor? You've often spoken about that. Yeah. You said, I don't know why I'm still not saleable. Yeah, I've done over 200 movies.
Yeah, I don't know why. There are people who have less successful movies than I have, and yet they're considered saleable. So this being saleable is one great mystery. And the economics of this film industry, I'll never understand. So I've given up trying.
But does it offend you?
It did. But doesn't any longer, because I realized that not being saleable means not being subjected to the pressures either. And that's what I'm grateful for.
In the beginning, you talk about this need for acceptance as a young boy who was didn't see himself as particularly friendly, intelligent or attractive. You talk about how claustrophobic it is for the public to react to you as if they own you, how people walk up to you at restaurants and say how much they admire your film, and then in a putting the knife in, you say you're not even sure they understand correctly or they're remembering your movies correctly. So is there a paradox? You want to be noticed, you want to be loved, but when you are, you don't actually like the autograph seekers.
Yeah, it's possible. What you're saying is true. But I also know that I did greatly desire it when I was a nobody. I dreamt of the day when this would begin to happen. When it began to happen, I was thrilled. When I was asked for my first autograph and so on. When people wanted photographs. But it's becoming more and more intrusive. And I like it less and less. But a lot of the time, Barkha, it's the truth that after signing my name, I'm asked what my name is.
No.
I'm not exaggerating.
Please give your autograph and who are you?
Yeah. Because they've been told by mummy or daddy that, hey, that's an actor. Now, even mummy or daddy doesn't know who I am. Or she's not quite sure whether I'm Kulbhushan Kharbanda or whether I'm Om Puri. You know? The number of times I'm congratulated on Earth, for example. And very early in my life, I had an experience. I was driving in a taxi and the taxi driver sort of does this and says, sir, hello. Fantastic, sir. Come on out. Too good for sir. Yeah, fantastic. आप गिरीश कर्नाड है ना सर? Yeah, this is the absolute truth. I meet a person in Pune about a year ago. Huh? This is not so many years ago. This happened after Nishant. But what I'm telling you what happened last year. I went with Randeep Huda, my friend, to Pune, to a person who has a stud farm, and we were riding some horses. And in the night, we were sitting around having dinner, and this other chap comes up to me and gives me a big hug and says, and he said, I remember, sir, you met last week. So I said, no, I've never been here in my life. No, I met you, sir. I met you. So I said, okay, did you meet Nana Patekar or Om Puri?
And which one was it?
And then he realized, oh, I'm so sorry. It was Nana Patekar. Now, do I look like Nana Patekar? You know, I wish I did.
All right, talking about Nishant, let's just hear from Shyam Benegal, who cast Nasiruddin Shah in his first ever movie.
Now, Nasir, of course, is also a person who I've had occasionally some early days, meaning early years of our acquaintance, because I came to know him via Girish Karnad. Girish was the director of the Pune Film Institute, and Nasir was an actor there. This is in early 1975. And I was at that time casting for a film called Nishant. and Girish was in it, and of course I was looking for somebody to play the youngest brother of a particular family in the story, and I couldn't find such a person, and we discussed it with Girish. Girish said, listen, you'll get the perfect actor for that, and he happens to be in the Pune Film Institute. And he was a student at that time. Nasir was a student at that time. And the odd thing about it is that Girish said, listen, he's a real pain though, because he recently sat on dharna in front of my door in the office, wouldn't allow me to go out, etc., etc. So obviously, Nasir was some kind of a, you know, problem, maybe not a major problem, but then Girish also corrected himself, not corrected, but added to what he said by saying he's probably also our most brilliant students. So anyway, I invited Nasir to come and see me, and he came to see me in my office in Mumbai. And well, it just took me a few minutes looking at him that he would be in the film and that he'd be perfect for the film. And Nasir later on told me that he didn't quite believe that he was in the film. What more can I say about him? Because whatever film he might be in, I will go and see it. Whatever play he is acting in, I will go and see it. Because I just cannot afford to see him perform. Not to see him perform, because he is really an outstanding actor.
Brilliant actor, but somewhat of a problem and a real a pain.
Yeah.
Is that how you think you'd be described even today? Brilliant, but a pain?
I suppose so. I can't run away from that. Because I have strong opinions, I suppose, and I never shy away from expressing them. And I'm not afraid of confrontation. So I guess, yeah, I'm destined to be known as a pain.
And you're not scared of unpopularity in your industry?
Well, no. I've never been terribly popular in the industry. But I've kept getting work. And I suppose I've kept getting work because I can deliver the goods when it's called for.
So are you detached from it, or do you dislike it?
I don't dislike it, because I see the possibilities that there are. And the possibilities keep getting, you know, frittered away each time, which is what creates my unhappiness with the quality of work that comes out of the industry. But it's the way to get across to lots of people. I don't dislike it. It doesn't interest me. I'm detached, I would say.
How difficult was it to write your memoirs? Because for someone who doesn't like the intrusiveness that comes with being in the public space, what you've actually done is to lay bare some of the most intimate details of your life. Is it difficult, for example, to write in the book as you do about the first time you have sex, which you pay for?
No, it was fun to recall it.
You were how old? 15, I think?
14.
14, okay.
Yeah. I'd recommend it.
Sure. would you recommend it as a parent to your children?
No, it wasn't difficult to write about. There were bits, you see, I felt when I approached them, bits about my relationship with my dad or a troubled early marriage. When I began to approach this, I wondered, should I write about this or not? But then the fact is that this happened. And it certainly has affected my development in some way. So without thinking of who would think what, apart from the person who I was writing about, I wrote it with as much of a candid quality as I could.
Did you ever feel a sense of embarrassment or self-consciousness? No. You know, to say, okay, at 14 I paid 2 rupees to have sex for the first time.
No embarrassment.
But people are not normally so forthcoming about, you know, it wasn't described as a, for example, an innocent rites of passage. It was a little more cynical, a little more adult, a little more precocious than you would perhaps associate with a 14-year-old.
Perhaps that's the kind of kid I was. I think I wanted to be adult and precocious. I think I wanted at that age also to be. So I guess I unconsciously captured the spirit of what I was at that time. Not really savvy, but pretending to be. I think I'd fantasized enough about it, you know, to feel I knew a little. I'm embarrassing you all, am I?
Yeah, they're more embarrassed than you are. Okay, let's hear from Nasiruddin Shah's elder brother and what his memories are of Nasir, including his first relationship.
Nasir is my kid brother. You may have read chapter 2 of his book, The Boy from Sardana. Well, that is me. I was the boy who was raised in Sardana. And Nasir and I met when he was 3 years old and I was 5. Now, from our childhood, we always admired an uncle who wore a leather jacket and had a comb in his pocket. And he was called, the family called him the loafer. So we thought that a loafer would be the thing we would want to be. So when we were asked, my elder brother said he would like to become an engineer. Nasir and I both said we wanted to be loafers. So that is our that was our childhood dream. Well, Nasir hasn't changed from childhood. He's the same kid brother which I knew. All I would say about him is that he's generous to a fault, and also that we make an unbeatable tennis partners. We have played the Aligarh Muslim University teachers team and beaten them hollow, both Nasir and I. Of course, he is the best actor in the country. I have no doubt in saying so. So when people refer to me as Nasir's brother, I have no problems with that. I have learnt to live under his shadow. Nasir and I had a very close and intimate relationship. I was the first to know when he was studying in Aligarh Muslim University, that he intended getting married to a lady who was almost twice his age. I laughed it off. I advised him not to do the folly. But he followed whatever was in his mind. He went ahead and got married, and I don't blame him for taking that decision.
So, your early marriage to a woman almost twice your age, as your brother calls it, Parveen from Karachi. Now, this relationship may not have been difficult to write about, but then you become a father. You become a father at an age when you weren't ready, perhaps, to be a parent. And I thought this must have been difficult to write about. You talk about the indifference you felt to your own daughter, Hiba, when she was born. Your mind was not there.
At that time, I didn't feel I was being indifferent. At that time, I did not feel anything, in fact, except concern for my own self and making my way in life. The child practically did not exist. I was neglectful, I was indifferent. I had no clue of what I was supposed to do. All the families, both my mom and dad's family, were families where if the child was crying, the father would say to the mother, "Le jao isko." You know, that used to be the ritual in the old days. I've seen this happen many a time. "Le jao isko." The father never considered it his responsibility to do his bit. If the child was a pain, it was always the mother's duty to look after. If the child was hungry, it was the mother's duty to feed, etc., etc., etc. The man was not supposed to do anything but gloat. I'm afraid I was guilty of that kind of behavior. I was just 20. And it was, in fact, while writing this whole thing that it began to dawn on me how callous I had been. And there was no point flagellating myself about it, but I had to confront it, and I had to confess it. There's nothing I can do which can undo that, but I'm trying, and I think I've made some progress in my relationship with Hiba since she came to live with us.
There was a gap of 12 years.
Yeah.
You never saw her for 12 years.
I didn't see her, She was living in England, then she was living in Iran. And when she came back, she was a complete stranger, and I guess so was I. So she was quite terrified, and I think remains so to a certain extent. I don't know if I can ever heal that.
Are you talking to her through the book, or have you had this conversation with her before? Or was it the first time you confronted actually how you were as a parent?
Yeah, it was the first time. When she came back to live with us, and I saw that she's probably had a very hard time, my heart went out to her, but it still did not occur to me how deep the scars of the earlier indifference must be. I thought that she's come to live with me, now everything is going to be okay. You know, it felt like the ending of a Hindi movie. Vachha mere paas aa gaya kind of thing. Life doesn't work that way.
You know, sometimes when you write about yourself, your self-image gets in the way. Especially if that self-image is a bit, you know, we tend to not want to see everything about ourselves. Did that happen while writing this?
Well, whether or not that happened, I had to say these things. I had to get it off my chest. I had to confess it. Self-image, well, this is part of my self-image.
How do you see yourself today?
As someone who's finally grown up.
It takes a long time, doesn't it?
It takes a long time.
Okay, I'm going to start taking some questions from our very packed house here at Prithvi Theatre. All right, let's just get you a mic.
My question pertains to what you talked about earlier. We've seen a lot of actors from here, brilliant actors, including yourself, in films in the West. However, the West still doesn't view this industry as powerful and influential as it really, truly is, that I believe. So how do you think, especially for actors, we can bridge this gap between Hollywood and Bollywood?
Do you even think it's necessary to bridge it, I guess?
Or do you think it's necessary?
What is the gap? I don't think they're moving towards each other in any way. Part of your question, I assume, is about the difficulty actors of Asian origin face in gaining acceptance in the West. But isn't that natural? I mean, how long did it take the blacks before they gained acceptance in Hollywood? So I think it's only a matter of time. Because as the succeeding generations will be more of that ethnicity than the current lot. Bollywood has always attempted to ape Hollywood. Right from the start, I mean, even in the silent movies, we had guys wearing felt hats and pencil mustaches and smoking cigarettes stylishly. And we are still trying to do that.
Okay, let's take the next question.
I want to know, if it ever came down to this at some point in your career, that you were so frustrated, so tired of working in Bollywood, which I think is an apt nickname for undisguised plagiarism, just like you just said.
Well said.
That you basically...
Instead of chucking it up.
Yeah, exactly. And moved to the West and felt that you would be more satisfied and more challenged in your work.
No, I never... I have been in moments when I was so fed up, I felt like bashing my head on the wall. But I never considered chucking it up. And I never did consider moving to the West, except when I was in college and had done only English theater and could not foresee a future for myself except in England, in the theater. So I did briefly plan to go to the RADA on audition, but it was beyond my means. And then my few experiences of working abroad convinced me that my place is right here.
So I'm trying to understand what keeps you going, because you don't always like... Do you always like the movies you've been in?
No, there are many I hate intensely.
Which is the one you hate the most?
There'd be a very close competition between quite a few. But there have been some which I cringe when I even think of. And some you catch at 2 o'clock in the morning on television. Yeah, you can't get away from them. But no, acting is what I was born to do, I've always believed. And I never thought of giving that up. Not even when I was starving in a garret and not knowing where my next meal would come from. But I had to persuade myself that these people who are not casting me today will live to regret it.
You actually get sent back on a train home when you first set out to be an actor by Dilip Kumar's sister, who knows your father. What was this about acting that you came back after all that?
I think it's more fun than real life.
That it is.
Living in the world of movies, living in the world of theatre, living in the world of literature, imagining I am Bill Sykes or Fagin or Heathcliff or something like that was much more fun than living in the real world.
So here's the question. How maladjusted does that make you to the real world?
Pretty much, I should think. And that is why, which connects to your first question, do maladjusted people only want to be actors? I suspect that is the truth. You find a more comforting world in your imagination.
Okay, next question.
Sir, I have been following your articles and what you've been writing. In one of the articles you mentioned in your boarding school, Nainital, you had the experience of watching Mr. Jeffrey Kendall's Shakespeareana's productions. And that impressed you a lot, especially this. There were no sets you used to use, just props. And then you also happened to mention that you also came to the same setup, but though independently, your aesthetic journey took you there. So can you throw some light on that?
In the school I was, we did a number of very spectacular plays. They were magnificent. I think the school spent a great deal of money on those plays. The costumes were magnificent, the sets were magnificent. It was just heaven. Apart from those plays, we would be visited by theatre troupes from outside, and foremost was the Kendalls. And while watching the Kendalls, it would never occur to me that this play has no set. This play has no grandeur. They are wearing tattered costumes, they are wearing cardboard crowns. But yet, those plays seemed more spectacular than the stuff we did with a great deal of finance in school. And continued to feel so. That was because these actors got the soul of the text and conveyed it with purity. That I realized is Mr. Kendall's true greatness. At that time, he was just a dazzlingly good actor. He was better than anyone I'd seen in movies, and we saw quite a few movies. I'd seen the great actors. I'd seen the Oliviers and the Orson Welleses and Charles Laughtons and Spencer Tracys. By the time I was 12 or 13, I'd seen Marlon Brando as well. Mr. Kendall seemed to me as great as any of these actors. And I realized years later that this is what makes him great. And I realized through him, the essence of theatre is the living actor on the stage. Theatre should be stripped of everything that is not essential, everything that does not help communication, everything that is there for decoration. Just chuck it all out and depend only on the text and the actor and see whether it gets across or not. That was an enduring lesson.
Okay. We actually have here in the audience somebody who's known you from the time you were very young. Prem, go ahead.
Well,
tell us something about him that only you know.
Well, firstly, we used to call him Teddy Bear in the school.
Yeah.
Why?
There were three.
Why?
There were three of us.
Eh?
There were three brothers. One was Papa Bear, one was Mama Bear, and I was Teddy Bear.
That's and right. who was Goldilocks?
No Goldilocks.
So he was Teddy Bear for us, and rebellious, as he's always said. And his elder brother Zoom, which you saw just now, he was called Zoom. He's the general now. He was very fond of cricket also. So I think you should add something now, rather than me telling the story.
Yes, I've written about it in the book. I thought it was Prem's brother Prabhat. You have to forgive me, Prem.
No problem. Done.
And I gave up my cricket dreams the day I was the third victim in a hat-trick pulled by Prem Kapil. I was bowled around my legs, and I still remember him jumping for joy.
That's right.
This was on the fourth field.
That's right. So it is worth it, even if you remember Prabhat.
Yes.
Instead of Prem,
but
it's
I
all
remember
done.
The incident.
That's wonderful.
Did you know in school that Nasiruddin Shah would go on to become an actor?
No, he was very talented that way. Like, you know, for all those things, like he said, I mean, I won't remember all those plays which he remembers, you know. But
yeah,
they used to happen. We all used to go there. We really used to enjoy.
We're going to hear from another school friend. Maybe you'll know him as well, Prem.
I studied with Nasiruddin Shah in school. We were together in the same class and in the same dormitory. This is St. Joseph's College, Nainital. We were together till 1962. He didn't complete. He finished in class 9 in 1962. We all completed in 1964, and this is the 50th year of our batch. Nasiruddin was called Shah Nasir in SIM. So, Shah Nasir, we used to call him, pet name was Teddy Bear. Teddy Bear was his pet name, because with his frizzy hair, and you know, he looked like a teddy bear, so he used to be called Teddy Bear. And he used to be always in these hand-me-downs. And apart from that, he used to wear very thick soled shoes, thick with tire soled shoes. So that is the typical image that he had. And he didn't like to bathe very often. And though we had baths, hot baths twice a week, he tended to avoid them. One day in school, in class, the principal patted him on the head and dust came out, dust flew. So the principal held a special bath only for him. I mean, with a stick, the principal standing with a stick, and a special bath was held for him.
Akshob Singh. Where did you find him?
So these are minor eccentricities. Did you go on to develop major ones?
Well, maybe, yeah, like not liking Hindi movies.
Yeah.
Because I'm in such a minority that makes me wonder sometimes whether, you know...
Whether you're the misfit?
Whether I'm the misfit, yeah. I suspect I am. Hmm. I don't mind.
Smoking and ganja happens to you pretty early.
Hmm.
Would you recommend that too, just like you did sex at 14?
I'd be careful who I recommend it to. As they say, thou shalt not alter the consciousness of thy fellow man. These are the two commandments for the nuclear age. Thou shalt not alter the consciousness of thy fellow man. And the second is, thou shalt not prevent thy fellow man from altering his own consciousness.
Did you ever feel conflicted about using ganja?
No.
Never?
No. No, because I knew it was used in places like the Ajmer Dargah. I smelt it around a lot of temples. So all the Sufis smoked it. All the yogis sitting in the Himalayas smoked it. Yeah, I mean, we've been smoking it for centuries, and suddenly it's become illegal, and suddenly it's become a crime. I did feel it made me come to terms with myself and made me aware, made me much more aware than I used to be.
Suppose your kids came home stoned.
They have.
And what have you said at that point?
Nothing. What could I say? I knew from the moment they were using it. I didn't say anything. It's their choice.
Are you cheering that on? Let's get a mic to her. You seem very pleased with what you've heard. Let's just get her a mic. Yeah.
I am totally cheering that one on.
Because
I've smoked in the past too, and it was good fun, and I didn't stay with it, but a lot of people do, and I really dislike the hypocrisy of those who do and pretend they don't. And it's much better to be out there. There was a jumla hai, pata nahi sach hai ki nahi, ki aapne ek bar president ji ko kaha ki nosh farmaiyega. Is that true? No, somebody told me this. It's probably somebody.
पर वो जमाना था जब राष्ट्रपति भवन में सिगरेट ऑफर की जाती थी.
जी 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 जी.
जिस पे राष्ट्रपति भवन लिखा होता था.
जी जी.
I swear this is true.
शायद इसी
से. So I remember taking out a bundle like that and putting it into my pocket.
Okay, there's a question here at the back.
एक शेर मुझे बहुत पसंद है. वहाँ से मैं बात अपनी शुरू करूँगा.
इरशाद.
कि कातिल के तरफदार का कहना है कि उसने कातिल के तरफदार का कहना है कि उसने मक्तूल की गर्दन पे कभी सर नहीं देखा. मैं अर्ज ये करना चाह रहा हूँ कि हिंदी सिनेमा में स्टार सिस्टम चल रहा है कि स्टार की डेट्स ले ली जाए और फिर उसके आसपास एक कहानी का ताना बाना, कहानी भी ना कहें उसको, कहानी कैसे कह सकते हैं, कुछ तो भी बुन दिया जाए. तो इन कमकलों का ये कहना कि ये जो हम बना रहे हैं ये लोग यही डिमांड कर रहे हैं, ये किस हद तक सही है और क्या कभी ये बदलेगा? कभी सचमुच में आर्टिस्ट आर्टिस्ट की सीट पर जाकर बैठेगा या ये व्यापारी ही और ये लोग ही ये सब करके हमें ये बताते रहेंगे कि तुम्हें ये पसंद है इसलिए हम ये दे रहे हैं?
मेरे ख्याल से नहीं बदलेगा, ये रवैया नहीं बदलेगा. दूसरा एक रवैया शुरू हो सकता है, वो अलग बात है. लेकिन ऑडियंस को ये दोष देना کہ آپ کو یہ پسند ہے اس لیے ہم یہ بنا رہے ہیں, بالکل یہ جائز بات نہیں میں مانتا. سب سے پہلے تو آپ ہی نے یہ ٹیسٹ پیدا کیا ہے آڈینس میں, آپ نے عادت ڈالی ہے آڈینس کو یہ کچرا ہضم کرنے کی.
تو اگر آڈینس کو دوش نہیں دیتے تو کس کو دیتے ہیں؟
جو لوگ بناتے ہیں. ہر ایک پوچھتا ہے کہ 100 سال پہ کیا پرتکریا. ارے 100 سال تک وہی فلم ہم بنا رہے ہیں, 100 سال تک ہمارا سینما سروائیو کر گیا, ساری دنیا دیکھ رہی ہے, بیلجیم میں اور بارسلونا میں اور کیا کہتے ہیں ایمسٹرڈیم میں ہماری فلمیں دیکھی جاتی ہیں. ارے بھائی وہ جیسے ہندوستانی کھانا کھایا جاتا ہے ہر جگہ, فار اٹس ورائٹی, فار اٹس اسپائس. اب جب تک آپ کی فلموں میں اتنا سبسٹنس نہ ہو جتنا ہندوستانی کھانے میں ہوتا ہے تب تک وہ سروائیو نہیں کریں گی. جو کلیشیز سیدھے نوٹنکی اور ہندوستانی ناٹک ٹولیوں وغیرہ سے آئے ہیں ہماری فلموں میں آج تک حیات ہیں. فارمولے آف دا سانگز اینڈ دی اوور اسٹیٹنگ اینڈ دا ٹپیکل کلیشیڈ کائنڈ آف کیریکٹرائزیشنز, وی کی ناٹ ہیو اینی ڈیپتھ ان اینی تھنگ. اور عادت پڑ گئی ہے آڈینس کو یہ بات ہضم کرنے کی کہ ہمیں دماغ تو گھر پہ رکھ کے آنا پڑتا ہے. اب مانا کہ ایک طبقہ آڈینس کا ضرور ہے ہو نیڈز دس کائنڈ آف ریلیکسیشن, بٹ آئی ووڈ تھنک دیٹ دیر از این ایکولی لارج نمبر ہو نیڈز سٹیمولیشن.
اوکے, ونس اگین آئی گاٹ ٹو موو آن. پرکاش سراف, ویئر آر یو؟
یو ہیو آلویز بین پورٹریئنگ کیریکٹرز آف ریبیلیس کیریکٹرز, ٹرن سیریس انٹلیکٹ کیریکٹرز. واز اٹ اے چینج آف ہارٹ, واز اٹ اے ڈیزائر to actually a 180 degree turn to actually act in films like The Dirty Picture, Ishqiyan, or was it the voluptuous Vidya Balan?
Vidya Balan coming up, by the way, with a question. Yeah.
Yeah, Vidya Balan, I knew she would.
is that a bad thing?
I was, no. I'm waiting for Sunny Leone to crop up.
Oh, unfortunately, I can't deliver that.
A lot of people forget that the third film I did in my career was a thing called Sunaina by Rajshree Productions, in which I danced around a tree and sang songs and looked like a complete idiot. My third, fourth film were films like Sunaina, Shayad, Kanhaiya, Khwab, which I hope none of you have seen. But I never have denied that I wanted to work in popular cinema. I don't think anybody becomes an actor who doesn't want to be popular. Why the hell do you become an actor? You don't become an actor because you're serious about your art. No, man, you become an actor because you want to meet girls. Absolutely.
So did you achieve your end?
I achieved my end. With lots of girls. Yeah.
Okay, I've got to hear from Vidya Balan now.
There are many, many moments, many, many memories, special memories that I have of working with Naseer Saab. But I will tell you that his daughter Heba was a senior of mine at St. Xavier's, and we did a television serial together, and which was my first serial. And I remember I had to call her up for something once, and when I called her, Naseer Saab picked up and I just hung up. I couldn't believe I was talking to Nasiruddin Shah. My God. And I love him as an actor. I've always loved him as an actor. And I couldn't believe that I'd get an opportunity to work with him. So, Naseer Saab as an actor, as an acting student, as your fan, I want to know, are there times when you still, feel nervous about a certain role or about a certain scene? Do you?
Yeah, I was nervous. I was nervous doing that dance with her because I'm no good at that kind of stuff. And apart from that, no, I have to admit that I've never acting has never made me nervous. Except for
that first time, which you write about your,
the very first
the book,
time, yeah. It's never made me nervous.
Do you remember the line you had to deliver when you were on stage for the first time?
I want one that will bark all day, bite people's noses off, and guard my house from any intruder. And that's how I said it. I want one that will bark all day, bite people's noses off, and guard my house from any intruder. And that's how they responded.
All right, we've just got a little bit of time left. So Dharmesh, yes.
We all know that how badly you wanted to do Sir Richard Attenborough's Gandhi. Which other role did you want to play so badly?
I don't think that I badly wanted to do that role. I badly wanted to become an international star. And I knew that getting the role of Gandhi would make me that. And it didn't happen. Looking back on it, I realized I was much too young to have played the part. I was much too inexperienced to have pulled off that kind of aging and so on, which Mr. Kingsley did extremely well, I thought. It was right that I was not chosen. I felt very resentful, of course, but more because I was deprived of this chance of international exposure rather than the despair of hell I didn't get to play this part. I didn't want to play Gandhi. I wanted to play the Lone Ranger, you know.
One really last question.
You said once in an interview that you were often offered Amitabh Bachchan rejected roles.
Yes.
So, I want to ask, is there any role which Mr. Amitabh Bachchan did and you think that you could have done that better?
No. No, I don't think so. That's not to say that I like all his performances or all the films he chooses. So you can imagine the stuff he rejects, you know. But no, I don't look at my work that way. I don't covet what goes to another. And as far as Mr. Bachchan is concerned, I think he is a superlative actor. I to be able to retain the ability to interact with the common person as he has in Karolpati, I think it's an absolutely tremendous achievement, being who he has been.
Okay. Just for enthusiasm, you can have your question. Okay.
Do you still miss your school days?
No, I don't miss them for a second.
Why?
I don't miss school. Why? I was not happy. I was not happy. I could not wait to be done with being a child. Yeah. We were subjected to the kind of treatment a teacher would get arrested for today. And they must have been very unhappy people. That's all I can say.
But sir,
okay, I've got to interrupt now and give the last word to Gulzar Saab. We can bring him up.
कई सारे लम्हे, कई सारे moments इस तरह के आए हैं नसीर के साथ, and खास तौर पे फिल्म में करते हुए, और बहुत ज़्यादा तो मौके आए हैं जिस वक्त मैं गालिब का सीरियल कर रहा था उनके साथ, और उसमें सबसे पहले तो अच्छा खूबसूरत मोमेंट मुझे मिला है जिस वक्त उनकी कास्टिंग के लिए बात हुई थी, तो मेरे यूनिट वाले या मेरे प्रोड्यूसर्स उनके बिल्कुल मुतफिक नहीं थे कि मैं उन्हें गालिब के रोल के लिए लूं, और मैं बज़िद था कि मैं नसीर के अलावा नहीं करूंगा किसी के साथ, और ऐसे एक मौके पर वो उनसे कोई भावताव करने गए थे प्रोड्यूसर मेरे, तो नसीर खुद आ गए ऑफिस में और अचानक आके मुझे कहा, देखिए एक तो ये लोग मेरे साथ कोई भावताव कर रहे हैं और मैं कोई ढीला वेला कम नहीं करने वाला हूँ इसमें से, इनसे कहिए पैसे तो मैं ऐसे ही लूँगा जितने चाहिए मुझे, और दूसरा ये कि ये रोल मैं किसी और को नहीं करने दूँगा और कोई करेगा भी नहीं, तो ये एरोगेंस, ये प्राइड, ये गालिब का पहला रिफ्लेक्शन है गालिब की शख्सियत का जो मुझे उसमें नजर आई थी, और मुझसे कहने लगे आपको नहीं मालूम कि मैं जब सेंट स्टीफन्स कॉलेज में था तो मैंने उस वक्त आप गालिब पर फिल्म बनाना चाहते थे तो मैंने आपको एक खत लिखा था कि देखिए मुझे फिल्म इंडस्ट्री में आ लेने दिए, उसके बाद ये फिल्म बनाएगा क्योंकि गालिब का रोल मुझे करना है, आज उसके बाद अगर आप ये रोल मुझे ही इतने बरसों के बाद मिल रहा है तो आप सोचिए कि मैं ये किसी और को कैसे करने दूंगा, और वो दाम वाम की बात छोड़िए, दाम तो गालिब भी अपनी तरह लेते थे और मैं भी अपनी तरह ही लूंगा, तो मेरे ख्याल इससे खूबसूरत मोमेंट मेरा यूं कहोगे ऐसा एनकाउंटर मेरा, इट वाज एन एनकाउंटर विद गालिब इटसेल्फ।
दैट्स रियली स्वीट।
Let me ask you in the end, that you seem to be cynical about your industry, but your industry, at least from what one hears, seems to like you a lot.
Well, Gulzar Bhai certainly loves me deeply, and I love him too. And there are a few people in the film industry who do care for me. and I don't deny that, and I appreciate it greatly. But the industry, by and large, of which I think Gulzar Bhai also is not strictly speaking a part, but he's been most wonderful and kind and has done me the greatest favor of my life by casting me as Ghalib.
There are colleagues like Shabana, Saif Ali Khan on a different occasion, who've spoken about discrimination they faced even at their level of profile.
The only time that it occurred to me was when, during the riots here, someone, supposedly a friend, suggested that I think of an alternative of, you know, maybe you should get out of the city kind of thing. And I was enraged at this person saying such a thing. It took a lot to stop myself from punching him across the face.
Your book starts with talking about how your family chose to take its bets on secular India, even though some members of your family actually migrated to Pakistan. Do you believe today the bets that your family took was the right bet to take?
I feel that. I always did. I never ever felt the urge to go there, nor did my parents. Had my parents gone there, I might have become... I don't know. Perhaps I'd be a legend in Pakistani cinema.
There are colleagues like Shabana, Saif Ali Khan on a different occasion, who've spoken about discrimination they faced even at their level of profile. Shabana speaking about not getting a house being a Muslim.
I don't know what to think of all that. I have not faced any. My dad was in the government service, in the provincial civil service. My brother has served in the army all his life. He's never felt it. My other brother, Zaheer, who is an executive in various firms, he's never felt it, and I've never felt it. The only time that it occurred to me was when, during the riots here, someone, supposedly a friend, suggested that I think of an alternative of, you know, maybe you should get out of the city kind of thing. And I was enraged at this person saying such a thing. It took a lot to stop myself from punching him across the face. I guess I'm lucky. But I think that there's way too much alarmism about this among the Muslims.
You mean like a siege mentality?
Yeah.
Do you believe that our actors are not as political? Unlike in the West, where you see a George Clooney taking a position, for example, on Sudan.
I think if you're that way inclined, then it's fine. And if you're not, it's not really your responsibility, because through your work, and if you intend to concentrate on your work as an actor, you don't really have a chance to convey your own beliefs. In any case, you're mouthing another person's beliefs.
Yeah.
And I think that actors who take political positions are also mouthing beliefs which have been passed on from others.
You can't separate the actor from the...
I think you can't separate the actor from the activist.
Well, it has been a great pleasure, Nasiruddin Shah. Your book is right here in front of me, called And Then One Day. Let's have a big round of applause and go and get your copy.